You are listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of November 14th, 2021, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Reapportionment gets underway, and advisory votes planned for the field house.
Every 10 years after the U.S. Census data has been processed, states reapportion or redivide their legislatures to reflect the changing populations in existing legislative districts to ensure that the representation in the state house is as evenly distributed as possible. This mirrors the same process that's undertaken at the federal level, where states can gain or lose seats in the U.S. Congress and existing congressional districts are altered. In Vermont, the process for reapportioning the election districts where state representatives come from is well underway. The Legislative Reapportionment Board, the entity charged with processing the census and population data, issued its initial proposal for redrawing Vermont's election district map on October 15th and sent its proposal along to local boards of civil authority for review and feedback. Boards of civil authority are typically made up of local select board members, town clerks, and justices of the peace. They have until November 15th to respond to the Legislative Apportionment Board, or LAB, as it's sometimes referred to. We spoke with several local town clerks to get their reactions to the proposed changes in the legislative districts and the feedback they are sending to Montpelier. Currently, Manchester, Arlington, Sandgate, and a part of Sunderland are in one district, known as Bennington 4. It's a two-member district, and that is one of the features the LAB hopes to eliminate. The tentative plan proposes that all House districts be single-member districts. Currently, there are some 44 two-member districts in the House of Representatives in Vermont, with the rest being single-member districts. The majority of the seven-member Legislative Reapportionment Board feels strongly that single-member House districts are a fundamentally better unit of representative democracy, in large part because people living in two-member districts, in effect, have two representatives in the state house, instead of just one, as people in single-member districts do. Others argue that a two-member district makes it more difficult for incumbents to be challenged, since the cost of running an election is more expensive in a district that may include up to 8,000 people as opposed to one of roughly 4,000. The Apportionment Board's proposal would return Manchester to being a one-town, single-member district, as it was in the past until the 2010 reapportionment. Sunderland, Arlington, and Sandgate would be broken off from the current Bennington 4 district and into newer ones. Anita Sheldon, the town clerk of Manchester, gave us the update on what their Board of Civil Authority had decided.
Manchester BCA decided to go ahead and agree with the reapportionment that was sent down by the lab. Currently, while we have seen the benefit of having two reps in Manchester or in Ben 4, we also agree and support fair representation throughout Vermont's various towns. Our board did vote 9-2 to encourage and approve the current proposal sent down from the state. So we used to be a one-member district, and then we became a two-member district, so neither one is really uncharted territory. We did reach out to the various the various towns that were part of Ben, or currently part of Ben 4. Sunderland agreed that it would make more sense to be part of, you know, towns that surround Sunderland. Arlington seemed to think that it was okay and it would make sense for Manchester to be a single town district. And we have not heard back from Sandgate at this moment. Chair Cynthia Kilburn came in this morning and she and I worked on sending everything to the state, so they do have our information.
Meanwhile, the Legislative Apportionment Board moved Sunderland into a new district that would include Landgrove, Peru, Sunderland, Windhall, Jamaica, and Stratton. One of the goals of the Apportionment Board is to wind up with legislative districts with a population count as close as possible to 4,287 people. That number is achieved by dividing the state's total population of 643,050 by the 150 House seats to reach 4,287 people. But Sunderland's Board of Civil Authority replied with an alternative proposal, keeping Sunderland in a district with Arlington and Sandgate, which would yield a population count of around 3,900 people, close enough to pass muster with the Legislative Apportion Board, Town Clerk Rose Keough believes.
The BCA had decided that it would be better for Sunderland if Arlington, Sunderland, and Sandgate can once again become a district. We're within the range for the numbers that we have to have, and it just makes more sense geographically, and we have more in common with Sandgate and Arlington than we would Stratton or Peru or any of them. So we're strongly, you know, it could come back with a different plan. You know, this is just tentative, so they could decide, well, maybe we can't do that, but we can do this and go from there. But I think what the BCA in Sunderland came up with just only makes sense.
Arlington's Board of Civil Authority met on Monday, November 8th, and their town clerk, Robin Wilcox, supported that idea, based on geography and other close historical links between the three towns involved, and the rest of Arlington's Board of Civil Authority agreed. Arlington and Sandgate had been proposed to form a district that included a part of Shaftesbury, but the board felt the connections between Arlington and Sunderland outweighed those with Shaftesbury.
So I think that's really great that they went ahead and did all that extra, put that extra work into it. So maybe between them wanting to be with us, us wanting them to be with them, and this, you know, new mapping, I'm hoping that...
I mean, they have to take into account a mountain.
Infrastructure, schools.
Sure.
Our
no, not up. The schools anymore.
Well, the high school, they still have high school choice.
Right.
Yes. Junior high, no, and elementary,
right.
No.
Right.
But they do still have high school choice,
they
and
do.
Some Sunderland kids come to our high school.
Right.
You know, we share a post office. We share a lot of things
I totally
with them.
Agree.
And we, like Nick said, you know, we all know the members on the in Sunderland. We know the clerk. We know, you know, people, the road crew. They all work together with our road crew, the selectmen.
Meanwhile, up in the mountain towns, Londonderry would be moved to a new district with Ludlow and Andover, and out of its current district with Windhall, Jamaica, Stratton, and Weston. Londonderry's town clerk, Kelly Piala, who is also currently its state representative, said in an email that their board settled on a counterproposal that would include Landgrove, Londonderry, Peru, Weston, and Windhall as a district. They analyzed the district from the standpoints of geography, population, and existing social, political, and economic interactions. School district factors were also noted. Dorset's current district would lose Landgrove and Peru and pick up Weston under the LAB proposal, while keeping Danby and Mount Tabor. At this point, Dorset officials are okay with that and aren't planning to submit an alternative proposal, said their town clerk, Sandy Pincino. The Legislative Apportionment Board has until November 29th to process all the feedback it will be getting from across the entire state. On November 29th, the board must file its final report and proposed House district plan. From there, current legislators will get to weigh in, and political factors may have an influence there. There is still a long way to go. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Following the announcement of a proposal to build a multi-purpose 67,000-square-foot field house at the Dana Thompson Rec Park in Manchester, and one reckoned to cost more than $13 million that would offer space for basketball, pickleball, general fitness activities, rock climbing, and a 200-meter running and walking track, advocates of the idea took to the road to explain and gauge reaction to it. The past week has seen presentations in Manchester, Dorset, and Sunderland, with others planned for Londonderry and the mountain towns. Reactions have been quick to arrive. Adding a swimming pool to the mix seems to have been a popular one, although that would be an expensive addition, its supporters say. Seth Bongartz and Cindy Gubb, who have formed a consulting firm specializing in not-for-profit organizations, have been organizing the presentations and highlighting the assets the proposed fieldhouse would bring not only to Manchester, but to all the towns that decide to participate in it. John O'Keefe, Manchester's town manager, and Bill Drunzik, whose Right Track Foundation is donating $3 million to help fund the building, have also been involved in the presentations. Towns will be asked to take an advisory vote first to see if they are interested in learning more about it, and then, later on, to vote on whether or not to participate in a bond vote to pay for their share of the fieldhouse. Project consultant Seth Bongartz explained.
The advisory vote is an indication that, yes, as a town, we're interested in pursuing this. So if we're talking, you know, maybe to 15 towns altogether and six say yes, then we focus our energies on those six towns. And then we start working on, you know, the intermunicipal agreement with those towns. And then it goes to a bond vote later. So it's like it becomes a two-step process. Yes, we're interested. And then second would be a bond vote. But with some work in between with the select boards being able to do the due diligence and those kinds of things.
Towns around the region will be asked for differing sums of money based on their census population and municipal grand lists. For example, as presently proposed, the town of Arlington may be asked for a contribution of approximately $804,000, which played out over the 30-year life of a bond at 2.1% interest would add about $36,144 to their town's budget. Dorset would be asked to pay in a little over $1.3 million, and Londonderry would be asked for $651,000. Manchester would be putting in about $3 million, and the town of Manchester would own the building. The presentations at Dorset and Sunderland were relatively lightly attended, although the reactions from the audience members seemed, on the whole, positive.
What do you think?
I think it's a great project for the community. It's good for the overall health and well-being, and I look forward to seeing how this progresses forward.
The overall cost after it's built. My fear is that they're going to come to the towns and say, well, we're short a couple hundred thousand dollars in operating expenses this year. We need more money. That's my biggest concern. If it was a pool, I'd be all for it.
I'm just afraid people in Dorset aren't going to know enough about it when it comes time to endorse it. So how can we spread the word?
That's my concern, too. When you've got a meeting like this in a big facility, a big, nice presentation,
yes,
and yet we got a handful of people here comparative to the town population. You know, getting the word out without rumors and misinformation and so on is going to be a problem to get the town educated to be able to accept this bond and go forward.
The audience at the Park House in Manchester on Monday, November 8th, filled up the room, and several questions were directed the presenter's way.
A couple of questions, but I'll start with this one. I noticed Arlington on there, and you don't have Arlington on the meeting list. What happens when towns don't, if a number of towns do not want to participate in this? What's the game plan there?
We'll assess what happens after the March town meetings when we ask all the towns to put it on the ballot as an advisory vote. We'll see. Not every town's going to want to do it. Some will, some won't, we suspect. And then we'll see what that translates to in terms of dollars. And theoretically, if no other towns were interested or only one or two, we might scale the facility down. Hopefully that won't happen because we think that would, I guess on a personal level, we've gotten invested in this, and I think that would be tragic if that had to happen because the opportunity presented by something this size for the region is really significant. So hopefully, we'll just have to see what happens. We do the best job we can, we take it out, and we see which towns are interested and go from there. So just to, I'll get you in 1 second, just to make this point clearly, and Bill said it earlier, but what's really going on here is that each town is getting a $13.25 million facility for a fraction of the cost. For Manchester, you know, $3 million to get $13 million, that's a great deal. For Dorset, 1.25 to get 13 point, that's a great deal. Each town, it's an amazing deal for each town. But together, we can build by having all these towns come together, something that no town could ever do on its own. Yes.
I've got a question specifically related to out-of-town users. It looked like there was sort of annual membership options. Specifically curious about, you know, day use. Is that an option?
Yes. Yes, there is. Yeah. Day use fee for residents. So if you just occasionally want to use it, there's a day use fee, and also for out of town people who just want to come in for the day.
Yeah, we're really excited about this. We Chris and I, we bought a place here in 2019, very fortunate timing. We moved up here. A young couple, good friends of ours, came up here to have their baby, and we've had tons of friends who've, you know, asked to come stay with us because it's a beautiful place, and obviously it was a weird past year and a half, and you know, on days where the skiing might not be good, you know, coming to the climbing wall, you know, I just want to make sure that they could potentially pay a day's pass, as long as there's not, you know, as long as there's open slots for non-residents to be able to participate. But yeah, this would be an incredible opportunity.
We had a chance to catch up with Cindy Gubb and Seth Baumgartz to get their sense of how the reactions had gone so far.
I think our takeaway so far from all of the meetings have been the positive reaction of people to the whole idea of the project, thinking that it's a great community asset, it would add a lot to what we have to offer here in the area. So we've been very pleased with the reaction of our community meetings.
Now, do you think the people who come to attend those meetings are ones who are going to be supporters, and the ones who have reservations just don't show up, or mutter to themselves, or post something on Facebook? Or?
Well, it's interesting because some of the Facebook postings have been negative and have a few followers, and some of the Facebook posts have been positive with many more likes. So I think it's just the unknown. People just haven't heard enough about the project to understand exactly what it encompasses and how it will work. So that's the whole purpose of trying to get out to the communities and share a direct face-to-face interaction so they can ask their questions and we can answer them.
Energy efficiency has come up a couple of times. Good questions and fair questions. And little tweaks keep resulting from these meetings. You know, somebody will raise, I can't think of any right now, but I know there's been little issues that have resulted in little tweaks to the way that, you know, something might happen inside. And that's one of the reasons these meetings have been helpful.
Right.
If the advisory votes and the subsequent bond votes work out well for the ambitious project, construction on the new building could start relatively soon after that, with an eye towards opening the building about 12 to 18 months later. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.